Thank you all for joining us just before lunch. This talk is titled Breach Starkware, Cost Mistakes Being Unprepared. And I'll give you a quick background on Richie May, and then we'll introduce the panel here. So Richie May's been around for 30, going on 35 years, business advisory. Our tech practice is fairly new. What we do is specialize in a couple of verticals. One is financial services, and the other is media and entertainment. We're one of the first TPN assessors that went through the process in the inaugural year. We have a few more TPN assessors going through the program right now. And we help vendors as well as studios with content security. Myself, Michael Wiley, I am the Director of Cybersecurity Services here at Richie May. And I will let the other panelists introduce themselves.
Hey everyone, thanks for coming to this session. I think you'll learn a lot. I'm Rich Greenberg, and I'm a former CISO for LA County Public Health and LA County Department of Health Services. Currently have my own startup doing network penetration testing, but I'm also the president of ISSA Los Angeles, which is the Information Security Association that was originally formed here. It's now international. Also president of a local software networking group that's international as well, called OWASP. So those of you who are touch on software security, this is the organization that has the default standards and checklists for your entire active team, and then I'm also on their global board. I just got elected, so keeping busy in the organizations, again, there'll be some good takeaways for you today.
So I'm Chris Covino. I'm with the Mayor's Office from Los Angeles. I'm the Policy Director for Cybersecurity. So what I do is I do not have a technical role. I do more policy, kind of coordination, big picture. So I work within the city to make sure the systems are protected. I coordinate with the LA Cyber Lab, which is kind of our private sector cybersecurity kind of like helping arm. It's a nonprofit. I coordinate with other governments, do regional cybersecurity coordination. And then we look for like workforce development programs. Those are kind of the big four things that I help coordinate. So again, non-technical. And my background is not actually that technical either. It's I have background in emergency management, homeland security, public policy. I was actually a crime analyst. I was an EMT, so very wide, diverse background. So I think it will complement their more technical background as well.
Thank you. And so it's kind of an interesting background, but within Richie May, we do a couple of different programs for managerial development. We had a speaker come in last month, and that's what kind of got me interested in having a little bit of a diverse panel here, was that they gave a story of a company that was trying to develop a better toothpaste. And the toothpaste, they wanted to see, well, how can we make people's teeth whiter without using bleach or abrasives? And they thought this was a problem that was unique. They were trying to solve it, they're brainstorming. And after a while, they realized, well, maybe there's other industries we're not so unique after all that we can reach out to and figure out, well, how did they solve this problem? So eventually they realized that laundry detergent was similar, right? They were trying to also make whites whiter without using a lot of bleaches or abrasives. And so they went to a laundry detergent company, and they realized that after talking to them, they didn't actually make whites whiter without bleach or abrasives. What they did was they used blue dye, which made the appearance of yellow duller. And so it actually gives the appearance of a whiter white. And they solved the problem that way. So that's why sometimes if you buy a toothpaste, you'll see that it's got a blue tint to it or a blue dye. And it only lasts maybe 6 or 8 hours, but it does the trick temporarily. So I thought it'd be interesting to bring in other people who maybe don't focus necessarily in content security, but they can bring some valuable insights with vendor management, reducing risks, and et cetera. So the state of content security here, we can see that looking at a couple of different reports, such as the Verizon DPI report, that media entertainment is increasing as a target, right, just behind government sector there. And so we need to continue to do things to protect the content and intellectual property. One example here before we dive into some questions and open up to the panel is I like to give the example when I teach about cybersecurity for universities, colleges, about incident response, and I try and give a picture of the analogy of the earthquake. And this often works better in California when I give this talk in Montreal, or I give it in, you know, East Coast, people don't quite get it, but Northridge earthquake. And I walk some of the students through it and I say, think about the earthquake again. So if it were to happen right now in this, when we were in this building, how would you be prepared for that? Would you be able to call your parents, your loved ones, your kids, et cetera? What if the cell towers were down? Do you have an alternate communication channel? Do you have a walkie-talkie with you? Do you have some other way of doing that? If you remember the Northridge earthquake, the freeways were collapsing. So even if you try and drive home to them, what if they're trying to drive here thinking that you're here? You don't have a way to communicate. You go to the store and you realize that the shelves are empty and there's no food on the shelves, and it's a little difficult to eat now. You know, the water mains are bursting and you can't get water. You know, all these things you start thinking about in the disaster, and you're like, I should have thought of that. I should have brought a bottle of water, should have put hiking shoes in my car. Some of the things after the fact, if you're not thinking through this, and I think there's a lot of organizations that don't think through it all the time, or they're thinking they are, but they're not really prepared for that. So we'll talk a little bit about how we can relate that. And so we see that there's a bunch of things going on with media and entertainment companies, right? They're in the news. There's been, in the last few years, more incidents in the news that I've seen in prior years, specifically in media and entertainment. And I think one of these things of, you know, even if your phones are compromised, your email, do you have another way to communicate? Are you using Signal or some other app with encrypted out-of-band communications? Do you have an incident response plan? Have you tested it? Is there an incident response company on retainer? I went to this one organization, they had a breach, and they're like, well, we're going to go send our persons to SANS training, and then they'll be ready to handle the breach. Like, you're already in it. You're already breached. You can't wait another 2 weeks to do it. So thinking about these things beforehand can really help organizations deal with these incidents and be better prepared. So I'm going to open this panel, and either one of you want to take one of these. How impactful would it be if we had some type of common resource or questions? Let's pretend if a vendor or a mom-and-pop shop was out there and they had questions. How do I proxy out to the internet from my content network? How do I realize what a good pen test is? How can we, would that be impactful if we had some type of common resource or help desk to answer some of these questions?
With small and medium businesses, clearly, is a challenge, right? Because if the largest organizations in the world are getting breached and hacked on a regular basis, as we unfortunately see in the news, then how can a small company deal with this kind of stuff? Do they have the resources to fund an entire security team? I think we know the answer. So what's the company going to do? And in addition, there are contractual requirements that these smaller companies have with major studios and other entertainment partners, correct? They have to have a minimum security in place. So what are they going to do? So one of the things that is huge right now in the industry is an online system that helps support these people. And that's typically in a pay-to-play, engaging a company. But before that happened, and they'll answer your questions, but before that happened, it would be great if they had an area where there were collaborators that can assist them. So I think that's something that anyone here from a smaller company would definitely appreciate, because A, you don't want to lose your contract, and B, you don't want to be breached, because then you might lose your contract or possibly your entire company. Sometimes the cost of the breach, I mean, you saw the record, $148 from the Poneman Institute for each record. Think about how many records you might have in your databases and what that can mean to you, right? You can't just say we have cyber insurance, because that's only going to cover part of it. So it's a very real problem.
Thank you. Oh, Chris, I wanted to comment one thing on that. So I was even consulted, or Richie May was, to come out to a fairly large post-production house, and they gave me a diagram that said, we need to have this. We need to have isolated networks. We need to have a production, air gap, this digital workflow. And it, some of this doesn't make sense for your workflow. Can we call the studio that asked you to do this? And they said, no, we told them we were doing it. I said, okay, so you were concerned about this, so you said you were doing it, but can we call anonymously? Can I call? Can we do something? No, there's only a phone number for breaches, and that's like calling 911. We don't want that anywhere near us, so figure it out. And so we worked through some of this stuff and did it the hard way, but that might have helped in that situation of having that number to call or that resource to call and say, hey, in a collaborative way, how can we implement this? Can we have a little bit more collaboration? I'll let Chris comment on that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you guys already have your industry already has the basic infrastructure to do kind of help desk type model, right? You already have the trusted,
Trusted Partner Network.
Trusted Partner Network. So you have the infrastructure there where you're kind of pulling resources and you're kind of looking at like a common standard. So if you kind of add in, so you have the assessment support in there. If you add in kind of a help desk type thing or something along those lines where these small third-party vendors can actually call in and be like, hey, I'm having this issue. What can I do about it? It's going to give a lot of support. Because if you're thinking, a lot of these third parties do not care about cybersecurity like the people in this room. So that's an assumption that I think it's fair to make, that a lot of them, they think it's important maybe, but they just don't know what to do. They don't read the news every day about it. It's just another thing for them to, another burden for them almost, right? So if you add a very easy to use, kind of user-friendly help desk kind of system, where you're probably not gonna have to, you know, if you all pull together, it's not gonna be a huge investment to have, you know, common lines of communication for these small third parties and help, you know, give them support. I think it's just it's a smart idea that, just, again, because you have the infrastructure there, you have the TPN, you have the MEISAC, you can kind of work together, you know, hey, you know, you have the assessments, you have them call the number, you know, during the assessment process, you give them, like, this is a help desk, please call in if you have any issues. And then the help desk, you can actually use the help desk to kind of evaluate what's going on. The help desk can be like, hey, everyone's asking about this one problem, maybe this is something we should look at, or maybe this is something we should put more education on. So I think pulling resources and making it easier for a lot of these third parties would really make something like a help desk work well. And then again, you can use it to evaluate and, you know, adapt your kind of methods and functions.
And then so we're probably most of us are familiar with the Center for Internet Security and the top 20 best practices. And I think they do a great job of breaking that down even further. It's like, these are the 20 things you need to do. Can't do those? Okay, here's the top five. Let's focus on those. And then recently they came up with an even better process for that, and they have the tiered implementation for small, medium, mid-sized business. So if you have a control of your hardware and software inventories for a large business, that might be all kinds of software, real-time reporting. But a small business, or let's say a drone pilot that's handling content or filming in 8K and they only have one computer, you know, is that the same process? So what do you think about some type of taking something like the MPA best practices for content security, having implementation or segmenting that or pieces that make sense for a small business versus mid or large business?
So I've read through the content protection guidelines. It's about a 100-page document. I thought it was actually pretty easy to read compared to some things I've read, like NIST, for example. You know, it was well thought out, you know, you made it clear. But he makes an excellent point. A small business is not going to have the time or understanding to go through that 100-page document and get it. And we talked before, like, so you're requiring a physical security guard for maybe like a guy in a garage. Like, that's not possible, right? So I think looking at a tiered system is very smart. I mean, the Department of Defense is doing that, right? They're coming out with a five-tier system, and this is, you know, they're dealing with weapon systems. So if, you know, I know content's very important too, but if it's life and death with weapon systems, you want to think about maybe we should adapt to a tier system too. So I think that's a real key thing. And then to add to that, you can set up workshops, you know, where you can do these kind of like, let's teach the five control, let's teach the seven control. I think it goes 5, 7, 5 again for the CIS controls. And then going back to, you know, your vendor assessments, you can even tie in a way where you're teaching these basic controls, you're lowering the risk, and then you're doing the assessments. It would be kind of cool to see if you did you took 10 vendors and did workshops before the assessment, and 10 vendors where you did workshops after the assessment, and see how they kind of compare to the assessment. You can actually see if, you know, these assessments are working. And my last point to this is there is diminishing returns, right? So what I used to do way back in the day, my undergrad was actually exercise science, and I would train like kids in college that, you know, wanted to be up a little bit faster, like 1 second faster. But you could spend 3 hours with them or 10 weeks or whatever, and they'd only get a second faster because there's diminishing returns, right? But the people that had no training at all and you just did the basics with them, they saw vast improvements. So investing just a little time in, you know, helping people with no background in this is going to go a longer way than investing, you know, a lot of time in, you know, these organizations that might have kind of their items together, right? So I think that's something key. Just a little investment in these small companies will go a long way.
You've heard of Kamala Harris, correct? Mm-hmm. She's Attorney General of California, just to reinforce his point. She pointed out that any company doing business in California, if you're not meeting those top 20, then you're not practicing good security. So that's become the de facto standard here for companies in California. And so that's why this has become such a big deal, right? But anyone who really wants to cover everything in good security, you need to supplement that with NIST, because the top 20 doesn't have a lot of stuff about governance, and that's where NIST comes in. So if you combine the two, grab the, if you don't want to take all of NIST, because really that's a bear, right? You can read it. Get a good pillow, right?
You have insomnia?
Yeah, that's very good. But you get the governance portion from there and the technical controls from the top 20, and then you're pretty much covering all you need to do, provided you're meeting them. Not to say it's easy, but there's your framework right there.
Yeah, I think Chris made a good point about some of the education, which was our next bullet point. And I think everyone in the industry as a whole, we could do a little bit better. I know some studios are doing that. Richie May, we are in 2020 starting some workshops that are going to be free. We're going to offer that out of our Burbank office and offer some of those. So let's say proxying out things that we're seeing that are difficult, or good handling of ingest, egest, or isolation. We're going to have some workshops for technical people that can come out and learn a little bit about that in a safe, friendly area. You know, we're not going to ding them for anything. We're a neutral third party. And so something else that I've noticed when I go out as a TPN assessor and or as a consultant, depending on which hat I wear, is I will frequently see compliance, and I will see, for example, I'll ask to see their incident response policy as part of the TPN, do my due diligence on behalf of the studios and make sure that it's a well-rounded policy. And more often than not, I will see a one-sentence or two-sentence incident response policy. It says incident response policy in bold letterhead, and it says we will call our third-party IT guy in the event of an incident. That's it. And maybe some studios ask them to put a distribution list for a breach or something. They add that in, when they've had independent assessments from the studios. But how do we get past that? Just check the box, and whoever is doing an inexpensive TPN assessment out there checks the box for me. How do we actually get value out of that rather than just check?
Well, okay. So incident response is typically underestimated by almost every company, except the ones that have already had that big breach where they've had to face the public. Because your incident response policy needs to have input from a variety of folks in your organization. It's not owned by security. It's IT, it's security, it's project management, it's the C-level, and it's your communications people, because they need to be on the team to understand what's going to happen and have their script already set. So when the news media sticks the mic in their face, they're not, deer in the height in the headlights, right? So everyone's got to plan this. You must test it. You alluded to that earlier. You've got to test this plan. You've got to have some tabletop exercises. Hey, we've just been breached. What do we do? Okay, one, have you identified how and what technically so you can block it and shut down and minimize the damage? Or are you still looking for it, right? So you've got to have that whole monitoring in place. See, all these things play on one another. Right, incident response touches on the technical controls you have in place. Are you monitoring your network, right? You have good controls. Are you segmenting your network? So if there's a breach, they don't get everything. They just get a little piece, and okay, you cover your losses there and you move on, but they're not getting all the rest of the crown jewels, right? But also each of these professionals that I mentioned have to have input, because they all have a role to play, right? And this is crucial. So the advice is to make sure that this has become a project at the highest level of your organization and not a security little thing that C-level says, well, they're handling it. No. This belongs at the top, because this is the essence of your organization. Because a public embarrassment is not good. Losing major content could be disastrous. Right? We've seen that already. So plan has to be elevated in importance, right?
Yeah, good. And I'll ask Chris here, since he's the policy person. But I've even seen when they do put, let's call our IT guy, they might just pull the plug, or that might be their response. And you've got 16 gigs of volatile memory that you lose. And we're seeing a lot of the incident response cases I work. We're seeing PowerShell, WMIC. We're seeing things that are all in memory. Pulling that power cord, we lose all that stuff. So not planning that out, like you mentioned, or testing it. Bringing in other parties like an incident responder and say, wait a second, we just lost 16 gigs of data towards our case here. We don't know what happened yet.
Yeah, if you can't do forensics, they can still be in your network. You don't even know.
So to support Richard's first point about exercising an incident response plan is key, right? Because then you can find out what the problems are. You can adapt the plan. From my experience in public safety, EMT, emergency management, exercising these incident response plans is absolutely necessary. It's the number one thing you want to do. So a lesson I'll bring in actually from emergency management is have a template, especially for the small businesses that don't even know where to begin, the ones that have basically call IT, and the number's probably out of date, right? So, have a template. I worked for the County of San Diego in their emergency management department for about a year, and one of the things they did that was really cool was they had a template for people with wildfire, high wildfire zones, right? So what they did is they literally mailed this template out. It was a 3 or 4 page template, and you just fill in the blanks. You fill in, you know, it gives you tips. So it could be tips like, do not unplug everything because of X, Y, and Z, right? But it fills in, here's who to call, here's what to do. It gave tips that I wouldn't even think about, like turn your gas off. So find out where the gas knob is, right? Stuff like that. Things that small businesses would not think about doing, or they would assume to do X, Y, and Z. You make it a quick, easy template. It only has to be a few pages. And when you go do the assessment, or even before if you do workshops, you have workshops where you kind of go through these templates with them. And again, for a medium or a larger business, they should probably have something a little more robust. But for a very small vendor, the guy in his garage, having that template could go a long way. Just so he knows who to call, when to call, what to do. And then the cavalry comes, right? Then the incident responders come. Then the other third parties come to help out. So I think that would be a rather easy, low-cost fix for the kind of industry. And again, you already have that common framework, that infrastructure to kind of talk to all these third parties. So getting like a template out would be pretty easy.
It doesn't have to be, you can obviously get free templates from Sands that are 20, 30 pages, but for a small business, it might make more sense to have a content owner provide some of those tips or a template or framework with those things like don't unplug the computer. That's something that we're starting to work on is for our clients some templates like that as well, because we've seen that need. But I love that idea is having those tips come from people with expertise. Maybe it's the content owner say, we've seen this, please don't unplug the computer, call this number, bring someone in.
And then you use
hello, is it as a breach? You know what to do, you got everything set? Good, thank you. That's the call you want, right? You don't want to call, what the hell should we do?
Yeah.
That's the call you want.
And I mean, again, you already have the infrastructure in there. Use the cycle you have. People doing the assessment can kind of feed into how you build the template. You can go out and be like, we're seeing this all the time. Let's feed it. And then you add in that help desk and you're being like, all right, during instant response, we're always getting this problem. So let's feed that into like revising this template or revising our workshops or whatever. Really use feedback from the community to kind of adapt your approaches. That's a big, we try to do with government, we try to see what's going on, let's adapt. You do that in industry too. So I think that's key. You have, like I said, you have the hard part done. You have the infrastructure in there where you're working together, at least the beginning of it. So start using it. And these programs to kind of evaluate other programs aren't as high cost as some of these technical tools, right? This is organizational issues. This is governance issues, like you mentioned. So I think kind of looking outside of just technical fixes and looking bigger picture and how can we kind of shift programs, especially for these small vendors.
Okay. I'm going to skip down a little bit because we got lunch here in a couple of minutes. I want to get their food, start with myself. How can we, some of these small organizations that have to, or they're suggested to comply with the MPA best practices or content owner's requirements for security, but they don't have those resources, what are some ways they could shift some of that risk or get some help with some of that responsibility?
I mentioned earlier about shifting responsibility to organizations in the cloud, managed security service providers. There's a lot of them out there, all different sizes, flavors, shapes. Be careful. I've had conversations with my peers. Hey, this is the greatest organization. They saved us like so many breaches already. And then there's the others who say, we found it before they did. What am I paying all these huge amounts of invoices for when I found it? It's not all equal, and the best advice I can give is talk to your peers, right? If you narrow down your selection to a few companies, and find out, hey, if you use these, and our network, our community, that's our strength, right? Because the Black Hat hackers, they're collaborating too. I think you must have all heard the stories of how they offer all these tools, so anyone without any technical knowledge can buy it and run hacks against everyone, and they'll even give you 1 year's maintenance and support as well. Seriously, in the package. So if they're collaborating and sharing their tools, we've got to do the same thing, right? So you can go out there and pay up with these organizations. You don't have to worry about scope creep, knowledge drain, because the techniques are changing so rapidly. It's really difficult for your team to stay up to date on all the hacks and everything that's going on. You want to pay for them to be educated and to be out of the office and learning all these things, it's hard. But if you outsource it, that's their problem, right? Because we all know that security today, InfoSec, is one of the biggest problems finding good talent and retaining it that we have today. So just outsource it. Let someone else worry about that. You focus on what your company does best. But again, buyer beware. You have to be, you know, sure that who you're contracting with. So again, talk to peers.
And to add to talk to peers, again, you have the infrastructure there to share best practices, right? So especially again, smaller and medium third parties, you can have a list like, hey, these are kind of vendors that you might want to outsource to. These are the ones that we trust. The other thing you can do is common contracts, right? You can have one contract where other vendors can kind of piggyback off to save money, right? So that's something we do in government a lot where, you know, we'll do one thing, you know, one department will do something and then someone else in another department will kind of piggyback off that contract. It's economies of scale, right? So again, use your common knowledge, use your common resources together to kind of solve this problem. And I think managing the risk via sending it to someone else is actually a very smart way to do it, especially for, you know, an overwhelmed small and medium business.
Sounds good. Any last comments before we break for lunch here?
Just like we talked about building and testing your incident response plan, do the same for your disaster recovery plan too. Too often we'll see a plan that's developed, not bad, and you say, have we tested it? It's, yeah, we're going to. So again, what good is having something if you've never tried it? And you don't want to try it when the high stakes are there, that you could potentially lose like millions of dollars. Test that too and build the disaster recovery plan with the correct people also. Again, these things should be upper management projects, not security projects. Security could run it and be project manager, but these need to be at the highest level because these are the essence of protecting your business.
My only comment at the end is basically work together to take the burden off these smaller parties, because that's your problem, right? That's the lowest. So, you know, share resources, share ideas, evaluate, and then try to take the burden off these smaller garage, you know, sized businesses. Because it's not fair to them, it's risky to you guys, so.
Thank you both. We'll be around for questions, but who's out there, if you want to chat with us about what Richie May does, some of their services, or pick brains of either of these wise gentlemen, will be around. Thank you all for your time. Have a great lunch.